America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another, exciting, I guess you could say, edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and joining me as always is Filippo D'Onofrio. Patrick Mifflin and Chris Elogi will be here with us later on. So if you're tuning in to us, you know, probably the time this comes up, you already know, but we Americans had yet another one of those happen again. Two of them, actually, within 14 hours.
Yep.
You know, it really sucks for a myriad different reasons when these happen. Not only because trying to actually discuss anything about them is, you know, there's so many people who want to poison the well from the very beginning that it's almost impossible to discuss these things, you know, like reasonable adults.
Yeah, this is true.
But also because we've done these so many goddamn times now on this show that I've just about run out of ways to talk about it.
Yeah, that too. I mean, that's... You can only say thoughts and prayers so many times, and we're way past that.
Like, okay, let me just put it this way. They have guns in Canada, you know?
Yes, we're not unfamiliar with these things.
Yeah, I mean, they've had their mass shootings as well. The most recent was last year, but that one only ended with two people killed and 13 wounded. And obviously, that's a tragedy, those two people killed, but this is compared to the 30-something people that were killed just last weekend.
Yeah. In two shootings, and like that's not even the ones that we haven't talked about.
Was one that happened the week prior. There was one that happened the following day in, God, I can't remember, was it in Illinois somewhere? But again, in Canada they do have guns, you know. Your average Canadian is about as well armed as your average American is. I mean, it's not quite to the point where, you know, it's like where like there's like 100-something guns per every 10 American. You know, it's something like 30-something guns per every few Canadians. Yeah. But, you know, for one thing, and we might as well go ahead and get all this out in the open. For one thing, there are no handgun manufacturers in Canada.
No.
They all went south the border into my country about 10 years ago. Any average gun owner that you have in Canada, in any of the provinces, is going to be some form of long gun. You know, it's either going to be like a hunting rifle, you know, like a bolt action, or like a shotgun.
Yeah.
There are people who own what they call restricted firearms, which is closer to like the type of automatic rifles that are so widespread down here in the United States. And that number is about a 50-something thousand people. And that's everything from like certain parts of Canada's law enforcement to, you know, veterans of the Canadian military. Part of it really is cultural, because Canadians don't really have the kind of cultural idea of having a firearm as a self-defense mechanism for the home.
No.
It really is a cultural thing. You know, it's – and we keep – you know, we always come back to these same discussions whenever these happen. And it's because, again, it's America's culture, man. There is a sickness – there is a cancerous underbelly to America's gun culture that needs to be confronted, and it needs to be excised. And the thing is, like a blanket assault weapon ban, it would help, but it isn't going to really solve the problem. I mean, it'll definitely make it more difficult to get your hands on those kinds of weapons, but that's sort of like, you know, putting a Band-Aid on an open wound.
Yeah. it's not really going to do much. Criminals that want to get guns are going to get guns.
Yeah.
It's the, I think it's the weird, like, almost fetishistic desire that some Americans have that just...
No, it is absolutely fetishistic. That's the reason we came up with the term ammosexual, because, it is a borderline erotic obsession with firearms. And also the fact that very few of them have any nuance when it comes to the ideas of gun ownership and gun control. It's always just a blank, like, even so, like, they'll always bring up the Second Amendment. And we've talked about the Second Amendment several times on this show, what it says, you know, the, you know, a militia being necessary to keep the peace, blah, 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 the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Obviously, it says nothing about manufacture or, you know, purchasing a firearm. It doesn't even say anything about ammo, for that matter. But, it's a vicious cycle, and it's going – and I hoped that Parkland was going to be the turning point, and I think it might be. But for right now, we're still having to deal with the same bullshit.
Yeah.
Because every time one of these happens, all of them come out of the woodwork, and all of them, you know, it's like they just, they have no, they are incapable of being able to read the room.
Yeah.
And these are usually the same people that also say, you know, now is not the time to politicize this at the same time.
As they're politicizing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like by saying that you have politicized it already.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll get to all that in a little later. Right now, actually, you know what? Fuck it. We'll go ahead and do that now. Since, you know, our good friends, Pat and Chris will be coming in later, we might as well go ahead and go into some of this stuff now. So we'll go ahead and start with our assholes a week. We can just... Again, you know, depending on how this goes, we can always edit this around, I guess. But anyway. Our assholes of the week. The two shooters, the one in El Paso and the one in Dayton. And both of them literally happened within 14 hours of each other.
Yeah.
It was... Like, you know, we have these almost every week now. And the reason this one was particularly... The reason these in particular got so much attention is because one was the sheer scale of both of them. Like, these both took out dozens of innocent people. But, you know, and also the fact that they were grouped together so close. And also because they both kind of seemed to fit the same profile, at least on the surface. So, the El Paso shooter, who, by the way, was taken alive, can you guess what his race is?
I don't know, white?
Oh, he was white as fuck. And he basically posted a manifesto on 8chan. And oh yeah, we're going to talk about them in a little while, too. Because they fall into this story, too, later on. But basically, it was, you know, he's saying, he said, amongst other things, that he wanted to stop the Latino invasion of Texas. Well, specifically the Mexican invasion of Texas.
Okay.
Which is really funny when you realize that, up until around the mid-early 1800s, Texas was Mexico.
Yeah.
Everything west of the Rio Grande was once part of Mexico. All of it. Texas, California, Arizona, Nevada, all of that was once part of Mexico. There have been families that have lived in those areas who have been there since before it was Texas, before the Republic of Texas itself was founded. And somehow this asshole didn't know that.
Well,
it also is very, you know, like the type of language he used it is almost like word for word the type of stuff that our current president has used. Even though he specifically tries to say that, you know, these feelings were before Trump became president, please don't blame him. Yeah, fuck you. We're blaming him. Because he absolutely is fucking culpable in this.
He's the fucking president of the United States. If it happens on his watch, he's fucking mm-hmm. responsible, whether he...
Yeah. And... Yeah, it's... And then, of course, there's Dayton. And the Dayton guy was, by all accounts, a psychotically misogynistic individual. Hmm. I mean, because his Twitter and his social media accounts seem to express sympathy for left-wing and Antifa causes, that doesn't really kind of hide the fact that this dude seemed to really legitimately view women as objects.
Yeah.
This dude legit had like a rape list that he kept. You know, it's almost incel type shit.
Yeah.
Luckily people have been, you know, there were a couple attempts because, you know, after the El Paso dude, you know, it turned out his whole thing was obvious American white nationalism. There was kind of trying of a backlash to try and pin the left wing stuff on the Dayton shooter, but it doesn't really seem to have worked.
Hmm.
Because again, it's really hard to focus on that and somehow still manage to ignore the raging psychotic woman hate that this guy had.
Yeah.
So after this happened, y'all decide, you know, obviously we ended up basically living through the late 90s all over again.
Oh, dear, yes.
The Ohio state representative from Ohio basically tried to blame the mass shooting on everything under the sun.
Except guns.
You know how there's a person who will go to, like, a bar, and they'll, like, go to the dartboard, and they'll get, like, all the darts that are... you know, available in the damn building, and they'll somehow manage to hit everything but the bullseye,
mm-hmm.
like including the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's basically what they're doing here.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like, you know, you've got a friend in prison and you're trying to sneak in like a nail file and like a cake or something.
Yeah.
And then they end up having, like, a party for someone in the prison, and they end up somehow managing to cut everything in the cake but the nail file. Like, so much so that there's, like, a nail file-shaped piece of cake left over. Yeah. That's basically what this is. It is literally, they are legitimately just everything they possibly can to try and do everything around guns but the guns themselves.
Yeah. And what I find, like, particularly, like, irritating and somewhat amusing about this whole situation is that by really trying to not acknowledge that guns are the problem, it kind of puts a big old spotlight on them, right?
Yeah. It's like, by your sheer incompetence, you somehow managed to make the one thing that you desperately do not want to be the subject of the discussion be the subject of the discussion.
Yeah.
So, you know, nice job.
They're blaming video games, they're blaming the internet, social networks, the alignment of the planets, the space-time continuum. I might have lied about the last two.
Well, the other excuses weren't any less silly. So, on top of, you know, this particular representative, Greg Abbott, the current governor of Texas, did the exact same shit.
Yeah.
He went on Fox News. He went on Fox and Friends and literally, you know, spouted blame for the violent video games, the violent media, and all that shit. And there's both something both infuriating but also comforting about that. Infuriating because, you know, again, they're deflecting as much as they possibly can from the elephant in the room, which is the guns themselves. But also comforting because it makes you realize that, wow, these guys' time really is almost up.
Yeah.
Because if that's the best that they can do, like, you know, that idea of, like, the violent video game thing, so both you and me, we're both in our 30s, early 40s, you know, we both grew up in that era when that argument was taken seriously.
Yeah.
You know, and... you know, it kind of sucked to be a gamer back then. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
But it's 2019 now. And, you know, gaming became mainstream. And, you know, those arguments, they don't hold up anymore.
No, because...
And I don't think these guys think they hold up anymore either. In fact, I absolutely guarantee you that they think it's also bullshit.
Yeah, they do.
But they still spout it because, you know, they got to give that red meat out to both the aging, craggly, almost desiccated part of their base that still believes it, and also to their donors so that they can deflect from the actual issue. So, other things that happened. Amongst the victims of the El Paso shooter was the parents of a two-month-old child, an infant. The infant survived because, well, we're going to talk about them in a little bit. But anyway, the point is the child had been taken to a hospital because, you know, during the shooting and while protecting them, they had accidentally broken some of its bones because it's, you know, it's an infant. An infant at that age is still kind of half rubber and isn't finished fully forming yet.
No.
But obviously, because he's the president, you know, Donald Trump had to go down there, even though the people of El Paso had made clear, we don't want you to come here. Like, your presence will do nothing to in any way lessen the hurt that this event has caused us. He still went down there, of course. Oh, yeah, because
it's got to be about him.
Yeah, and while he was there, it turned out that that little baby we talked about had already been taken from the hospital to, I think it's their grandparents.
Yeah.
And so they, you know, Trump was just desperately needing that photo op. He's like, bring the baby back here. I got to have my photo op. And so they did. And he's in there. Melania's holding him, which, you know, is fine. And Trump is there. You know, he's got that big old shit-eating grin and a thumbs up. Because
that's the only thing he knows how to do.
Yeah. Just goddamn it. But... it's just a whole week of bullshit. Tucker Carlson, this week before he went on his vacation, which I don't know if you know that, but that's kind of a pattern that happens over at Fox News when one of their talking heads says something a little too controversial.
Then they go on vacation until it's over.
Yeah. Sometimes they don't come back, which is what happened to O'Reilly, but. Basically, Tucker Carlson went on a show, claimed that white supremacy is a hoax being perpetrated by rich people. Now,
says a rich white person.
Yeah. Also, when he's talking about rich people, I get this kind of sort of meaning that he's saying the Jews.
Would I not be surprised?
Yeah.
Just some of these people, it boggles my mind the kind of stuff that they come up with, because it stretches senses. Well, it doesn't make any goddamn sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've passed the point of just any sort of comprehensible things going on. I mean, we're in crazy town now.
And then on Twitter, Neil deGrasse Tyson, I think he kind of accidentally did a well actually. About the shootings, I think he was trying to go ahead and bring him on. I think what he was trying to do was he was trying to put into perspective like the amount of people that I'm reading this now. No, he really shouldn't have done this.
this was poorly.
Like, I kind of understand what he was trying to do, but
he didn't need the other four. He could have just and used that last one, and that would have been enough.
Yeah, that would have been enough, but he kind of accidentally blew the...
Yeah, his whole point.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially because there's people here that are like, yeah, some of these numbers are wrong or taken out of context.
Yeah. But that's not the point. When you do a thing like this where you're trying to quote data, you always put your hammer point last. And then look what's last. It's you know. But he didn't need those other four. Just put it that way.
But and finally, to just cap off this week of bullshit, you know, this being the same week after all of this awful shit has happened, ICE decided to launch these huge immigration raids in Mississippi, ended up arresting hundreds of people and not notifying the families or the kids. So some children came home from school with no parents at the house.
Or they didn't get their ride home.
No.
Expecting.
No. I don't remember I think it was Jim Sterling who, because for those who don't know, Jim Sterling actually lives in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. I think he brought up this up. This might be one of the things that actually gets to turn a lot of the people in the South against ICE.
Mm.
Because take it from somebody who is a Southerner. Southerners are stubborn traditionalists if they are anything.
Yeah.
But for them to really get any kind of empathy, a lot of times it has to directly affect them.
Yeah.
And a lot of these were people that, because, you know, this wasn't like them going into the big cities. These were like some of the smaller towns in Mississippi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And thing about living in a small town is everybody knows everybody.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot of Jim Bobs and Sally Ann's who are not going to be too happy at what ICE just did this week.
Yeah.
They're going to be very, very angry.
Especially if they're, you know, having to basically take care of their neighbor's kid because ICE just stranded them. You know,
mm-hmm.
One, you know, Southern hospitality is real, and if that, if they're in that kind of a situation, these people are going to pull together for that, and that's not going to go well for ICE either.
No.
Yeah. Especially when they have some great quotes here. Let me see what they have here. We are a law enforcement agency, not a social services agency.
Yeah, this is ICE saying this, and it's just sort of giving you a good idea of their mentality. Yeah.
Of course, Trump chimes in, the reason is because you have to go in, you can't let anybody know, otherwise when you get there, nobody will be there. But I want people to know that if they come into the United States, they are getting out, they are going to be brought out, and this serves as a very good deterrent. Yeah, no.
Yeah,
no. For the record, no, it has not worked as a deterrent at all. In
people
fact,
are willing to take the risk.
It in fact has been shown that people illegally crossing the border has actually gone up during the Trump administration.
Yeah.
It is actually shot up by a considerable margin.
Yeah.
Yeah, because and they're think, trying to get because, people to stop coming in the legal way.
Yeah, it's the closing drawbridge effect.
Yeah.
You know, that people see the drawbridge closing and they're trying to rush in before, you know, and make the jump before, you know, there's nothing but a moat in between them.
Mm.
Yeah, but, and so they talked to ICE here, NBC News did, and they laid out sort of the steps they took out of concern for families. Some parents of young children were released. About 30 people were released at the workplace rather than being taken into custody. The official said many of these releases were done out of concern that the parents had tender-age children under the age of 5. But the officials cannot guarantee that all parents with tender-age children were released. That's like the butt for everything here.
Yeah.
The immigrants taken for processing were each allowed to make a phone call. They said they believe they would be the opportunity for parents to call neighbors or relatives who could provide child care. Over 270 parents were released quickly, were given court dates, and released within a day. ICE officials said many of the decisions to release were made because of custody determinations, such as a parent explaining no one else was at home to take care of the children. And as soon as the raids were underway, schools across the area were notified that some of their students could be affected. What they did not do, notify Child Protective Services. Mississippi Child Protective Services Department said it was not notified in advance of the raids, that it should have been told in order to do its job. I suppose said they were under no obligation to notify the agency and said doing so might have tipped off immigrants of their plans. Let's see. Tell schools in advance. They did not do that. Tonomigiya School Superintendent District, where approximately 15 families were affected by the ICE raids, said the school is not given notice in advance. So some parents were not at home when children left school that day. Well, organizations stepped in to make sure the children had a safe place to go after school. It was the first day of school for many school districts across Mississippi. They did not guarantee that every child went home to a house with a guardian. ICE officials said ICE could not make sure all parents of children had been released or that all children had a safe place to go after school. There are no plans in place to alleviate the risk entirely. We are not a humanitarian agency, but we are trying our best to ameliorate the humanitarian concerns.
No, you could have just not raided. That would have ameliorated things quite a bit.
Yeah. You couldn't have had this gigantic operation that would have caused this much grief and this much, you know, issues that you would have to deal with beforehand, but no.
Yeah. And where things looking is just, so they went to seven plants. The seventh plant, there were no arrests because nobody was there.
Yeah.
They had the day off or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm. But, so, to help sort of alleviate some of the taste there, we got ourselves our heroes of the week. And, we mentioned earlier, the 2-month-old infant who, was saved, who managed to survive the shooting, the one that unfortunately got dragged into that rather awful photo op with President Trump.
Of which none of the families wanted to go back for the photo op.
Yeah. No. The reason that they survived is because of their parents, who literally put themselves as human shields between them and their child. They use their bodies to literally shield this little baby from gunfire.
Yeah.
Sadly, neither one of them survived, but the infant did, even though, you know, in the course of protecting the young child, they ended up, breaking some of its bones. Also, in El Paso, there was a gentleman who was near the site of the shooting. By the way, for those who want to know, this particular shooting, the one in El Paso, it happened at a Walmart.
Yeah.
Which is part of the reason why there's so much footage of it, because you had people with their phones, you had the security cameras, all that stuff. And there was a gentleman there who, as the shooting was happening, realized that there was a lot of little kids nearby, and so he grabbed as many of the little kids as he possibly could to get them to safety.
Yep, he's named Glendon Oakley.
Mm-hmm.
He's a current member of the military. He's a licensed carry firearm.
Mm-hmm.
So he pulled out his weapon as he heard gunfire echo through the Cielo Vista Mall.
Yeah.
Which is where the Walmart is at. He didn't open fire, but as he fled, he tried to grab as many kids as he could. He said, "I'm in a sports store and I'm shopping. I'm buying a jersey. A little kid runs in talking about there's an active shooter at Walmart. Said he didn't believe the child at first. When he walked out into a corridor to continue shopping, nearby Foot Locker, he heard gunfire. He said, I got my license carry, so I pulled my gun out. I just started to hide. The fog guard closed down as precaution, he said, but scared shoppers tried to pry their way inside. Oakley said he ran to the parking lot, and I see a whole bunch of kids just running around, you know, without their parents and stuff. So I get my bag in my hand and try to pick up as many as I can. He said some of them jumped out of his hands. Ain't much I can do for the kids, so I just made my way out. Police stopped him because he had a weapon, but they let him go after he provided his proved that he had his weapon legitimately.
Yeah.
I was worried about those kids, man. I wasn't even worried about myself.
Yeah. For those of you NRA assholes who were looking for the good guy with the gun, here he is. This is the good guy with the gun. But you'll notice he didn't go in there guns blazing like some of these assholes seem to think they're supposed to do.
His first thing
was to make sure that people got to safety.
Yeah, like the Dayton shooter was, the cops were nearby.
Mm-hmm.
Having to stop him pretty quickly, but not before he could hurt like 25 people.
Yeah.
Because he had a ridiculous drum thing attached to his gun.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the literal, like, the oil drum. It's those double drums that they put on, like, fully automatic machine guns. Like, the ones that, with the fucking, like, what do you call them? The fucking, like, rope of ammunition that strapped to it.
Yeah.
It's like the helicopter gun from Predator that Jesse Ventura uses. It's that. And yeah, that's the reason he was able, because again, we're not talking about like a shotgun or a hunting rifle. We're talking about a modified, fully automatic submachine gun.
Yeah. And it's like, all the parts are legal, but modifying it is not.
Mm-hmm.
I think the drum is illegal in Ohio, but he ordered it from Texas that was brought in from outside the state, so it was technically legal because there's no laws against bringing them around.
Yeah. On top of all this, this wasn't the because although we had these two awful things happen, there was some also attempted stuff that happened as well this week. For example, there was another guy in yet another Walmart in Missouri who walked into Walmart clad in body armor and carrying an automatic rifle.
Yeah.
And the only reason he didn't start anything is because there was an off-duty firefighter nearby who managed to stop him before anything happened.
Yeah.
As
in Springfield, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, off-duty firefighter. He saw the guy like walking around with a shopping cart, recording video of himself on his cell phone, all clad in body armor. I think they have they don't have the picture here. But yeah, he's like ridiculously overdressed to just go shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like either he's a huge idiot or he was planning something awful.
And see, the worst part is, both of them are 100% possible.
Yeah.
Because let me tell you ever said, I don't know about you guys, but you know, down here in Georgia, I have more than a few times come across some small dick dumbass coming in with their fucking AR-15s, you know, just toting them around like they're gonna be like they're gonna fucking go Rambo on somebody. Like
I see is like a security group.
Yeah.
Like they'll come by getting like food and whatever.
Yeah. And that's not these guys. These guys are usually like either look like they're messed the fuck out or they're like these tree trunk looking neck bearded assholes.
But, yeah.
But yeah. Well, yeah.
Wasn't fatal.
No, yeah. That one was actually stopped before anything happened.
Yeah. He held him down until the cops came to back him up.
Yeah.
He had a tactical rifle, a handgun, and more than 100 rounds of ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
He was said to have been stopped by the armed firefighter after leaving through an emergency exit.
Yep. God damn it. Finally, before we go on to the main stuff, we also want to give a shout out to Danny Trejo. Danny Trejo, with the help of a bystander in Los Angeles, saved a child from an overturned car. I mean, then again, you know, anybody who's seen or met Danny Trejo knows it looks like the dude could probably lift a space station, but
flipping over a car, probably not so hard for him.
Yeah, but pretty awesome that he did that.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's the first time that he's done something like this either. I think there's been at least one other time in the past where he's helped save someone from a car or something. But
yeah, everything I've heard is he's a really nice guy.
Oh yeah.
He basically, the car flipped over. It was a special needs kid.
Mm-hmm.
That was trapped in his seat.
Yeah.
Basically Trejo went over, cause he was in a car a couple back. Basically helped get in there. Another person was on the other side, saw mm-hmm. that he was stuck in there. She undid the buckle, and he pulled him out.
Mm.
Yep.
Basically said, like, the best things that have happened to me in my life has been from helping other people.
Yep. Mm. But,
of course, he's shirtless, too, when he's doing all this. I don't know if he took it off because of the glass or whatever, but...
Probably.
Yeah.
Then again, it is also Los Angeles in August.
Yeah.
So. And he's 75, so he probably doesn't give a fuck.
True.
Yeah. And before we go any further, just because I want to say this, because I know there's going to be at least one person out there who listens to this and is going to be thinking this. I don't hate guns. Okay? No. I like guns. Guns are fun. You know,
you
when they're
some
control.
Of the people that have them.
Yeah. You're talking to people who have guns. I have five. You know, we've fired guns at target practices and places like that. You know, every Thanksgiving, and we've got my family's got the hunting rifles out to shoot at, you know, cans and Tannerite shit, you know? It's fun. You know, you're talking to people. I know I have experience with guns. I have guns. I own guns. I know how to use guns.
And you know how bad they can be.
Yes, and I know what they can do. And I know what they can do accidentally without you not wanting them to. Things like fucking anybody who's ever had like a handgun and has done the research, or God forbid has had it happen to them, had slam firing. Slam firing is what happens when a piece of dust or debris gets between the pin and the trigger, and it basically turns your handgun into a fully automatic machine gun. You know, that's one of the things that happens if you don't upkeep these things. Also, all the basic rules, you know, don't keep your finger on the trigger. Keep them where they're supposed to be, out of reach of children. Always have the safety on unless you're using it. And most importantly, don't point it at anything unless you intend to shoot that thing.
Yeah.
And none of these fuckers apparently know that shit.
Yeah, go Google for kids shooting parent.
Yeah.
Accidents. Like, see how many of those you can read before you think that there's no reason to have these.
Yeah. Look, all I'm asking, really, at the very least, is let's at least treat, you know, getting licensing and owning a firearm the same way we treat an automobile.
Yeah, that seems like a reasonable request.
Go to there, get, you know, have to take a class, have to take a written test.
Yeah.
You know? And
should
then
like having a car or
sound in mind and body.
Mm-hmm.
Just that's all I'm asking.
Yeah.
I don't know if you mentioned that, like, there are bills for universal background checks.
Yeah, which the House are passed completely.
That, but yes. Which kind of says, no, we're not doing this.
Yeah. And
they might do it after they get back.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Like,
it is 100% nothing but naked greed. That is all that it is.
Yeah.
And they don't care how many people die because of it.
It's not them, so they don't care.
Yeah.
And it's
so
like
if you
people
want
talk
things
about,
to change, the first thing you're going to need to do is when November comes around next year, you're going to have to vote these fuckers out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people talk about, like, oh, we killed, you know, a bunch of kids were killed, nobody cares. It's like, we've had presidents killed by guns, mm-hmm. and nobody gave a damn.
Yeah.
We have had, in our history, we have had 3 presidents killed via an assassination.
And one as recent as 50 years ago.
Yeah. We had Abraham Lincoln. He was the first. Then we had James Garfield. That happened in like the early 1900s. And then, of course, we had John F. Kennedy. And that was just in the early 60s.
Yeah, wasn't Aaron Burr a vice president at one point?
Aaron Burr was a vice president, but he
And he's killed
shot.
A man.
Yeah, he
I mean,
killed
I'm
Alexander
saying he's,
Hamilton.
He killed a man.
Yeah, he killed Alexander Hamilton. But Hamilton was never president. But
no, but I'm saying, like,
he was a founding
people voted
father.
Into office who had shot somebody, killed somebody.
Yeah.
Even if it was a duel that was legal at the time, but still.
But, yeah.
Yeah, like, the problem with the Second Amendment is it was in a time where we didn't have police.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't have people that were there to protect the, you know, women and children and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Now we do. We don't need everybody to be carrying guns.
Yeah.
We don't need cops carrying guns most of the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, me and Phil talked about this at the top of the show, and we'll just briefly go over it again, but you know, up in Canada, you know, they have guns there too, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have a lot, actually. In fact, on average, they're just about as well armed as the average American is.
Yeah.
But there are some very clear cultural and material differences between the two. For one thing, again, there are no handgun manufacturers in Canada. At least not anymore. About the last one moved down south about 10 years ago. Also, most of those guns that we talk about being owned are all long guns. You know, rifles, shotguns.
It's something like 20% of the population has 100% of the guns here.
Yeah.
It's like the vast majority of people here do not own a gun.
No. Or at the very least, if they do own one, it's like hunting, you know, it's like my granddad's old hunting rifle, you know.
Yeah, it's something like 2% of the population owns like 80% of the guns. Mm-hmm. They own multiple guns, up to like a dozen or more, and it's like,
yeah,
that's ridiculous.
And look, I'm sorry, but the life of a child and its ability to feel safe trumps whatever right you have to a firearm.
Yeah.
Like, just fuck you.
Especially when the laws are as lax as they are.
So, like, you know, Texas, don't talk to me about your fucking rights, okay? Mm. And now we're going to get on to what would technically be the proper show proper, but since Patrick isn't with us yet, we're going to go ahead and just do it now. We'll get to our what we've been up to this week later on when Pat gets here. But in the meantime, our first story of the night is, as we mentioned earlier, as I mentioned earlier in the show, the El Paso shooter basically put his entire manifesto up on 8chan. Mm-hmm. And for those who don't quite know what 8chan is, 8chan is for the people who were too extreme for the people on 4chan.
Yeah, who thought they were getting too liberal.
Yeah, basically what happened is that 4chan finally decided to shut down the ARK Gamergate, the Gamergate part of their website, because it was getting too toxic for even for them.
Yeah.
And so this is where all those people eventually went. And there's two people who founded 8chan. One of them doesn't anymore and has actually said that the site has basically become a receptive area for terrorism. The other guy is this creepy looking motherfucker who, he does it because, you know, it's freedom of speech, man. And he looks like everybody's pedo uncle. But
yeah, I remember when Gamergate was getting big, and the guy who set up 8chan was the one in the wheelchair.
Yeah.
He has physical disabilities and, like, used himself as a shield for whatever they were doing.
Yeah. That's like, the guy I talked about earlier. Yeah. He's the one who basically washed his hands of the whole thing.
It's like, no, you still have blood on your hands, dude.
Yeah.
Until you somehow get the whole thing shut down and they don't create 16chan or whatever they want to call it. Yeah. But yeah, should actually get to this news by just setting it up.
So,
their provider Cloudflare, they said, "Yeah, we're done with them."
Yeah.
Weirdly defended it early on,
mm-hmm.
like, "Oh, we need to keep this up so we can help the police whenever there are issues,
mm-hmm.
Stuff like that." And then they found out, "Oh, this shooter was also on 8chan."
Mm-hmm.
I guess they decided like three strikes, policy. Yeah. I guess.
So as far – last time I checked, 8chan is not online anymore.
Not yet.
Not yet. I mean,
the guy that wrote this up is at Cloudflare is basically knows that it's going to eventually go back up somewhere else.
Yeah.
Like where – like he notes that they used to have Daily Stormer on their network, and they eventually dropped them, and they got picked up by one of their competitors who is very much all in on the far right shit, supporting that. So they probably think they're going to be going over there at some point.
Yeah. Cloudflare, they seem to draw the line when people get killed. That's a good line to have.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're also not a hosting provider. They're basically a bandwidth provider, kind of caching server.
It's like DDoS protection kind of stuff too.
Yeah. And this is actually the second time they've kicked the site off. The last time they did that was a Daily Stormer.
Yeah.
So
they do also spend time here. Like some have wrongly speculated due to some conception of the United States First Amendment as incorrect. First, we are a private company not bound by the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Second, the vast majority of our customers, more than 50% of our revenue, comes from outside the United States. Mm-hmm. Are the First Amendment similar libertarian freedom of speech protections do not apply? The only relevance of the First Amendment in this case and others is it allows us to choose who we do and do not do business with. Doesn't obligate us to do business with everyone.
Yeah.
Which is something people need to learn about the internet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Cloudflare is one of those companies that I actually quite like. I've heard a lot of their people speak, and they're good people. So, you know, sometimes they have crappy people on their network, and when things get a little bit too bad, well, they don't seem to have a problem with kicking them off.
They just straight drop them, as they should.
Yeah.
But following up, so the press and the reporters got over to Mr. Beto O'Rourke, who is currently one of the people currently seeking the nomination for the Democratic candidate for President of the United States. And, of course, you know, Beto is a native Texan. And as you can guess, what happened in El Paso really got to him. And somebody in the press corps, when they were talking to him, you know, said, you know, what do you think Trump's involvement in this shooting? How do you think he's involved? And Beto just straight showed that he really just had run out of fucks to give.
Yeah, this was basically, he was on his way to his car to leave. So this person was, like, getting him, like, at the very end of this whole, I don't know, vigil that they were doing for the victims. And so the reporter asked, is there anything in your mind that the president can do now to make this any better? And Beto's response was, what do you think? You know the shit he's been saying. He's been calling Mexican immigrants rapists and criminals. I don't know, like, members of the press, what the fuck? Hold on a second, you know, it's these questions that you know the answers to. I mean, connect the dots about what he's been doing in this country. He's not tolerating racism, he's promoting racism. He's not tolerating violence. He's inciting racism and violence in this country. So, you know, I don't know what kind of question that is. And there's audio of it down below of this tweet, but
where he's just like, he's like, you know the answer to this shit already.
It's like, unless you would stick your head in the sand, part of it. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, it's like, the guy specifically uses a lot of Trump's language in his manifesto. Of course he's part of it.
And he specifically traveled halfway across the state to go to a border town.
Yeah. He drove 9 hours to get to El Paso to do this.
And Texas is flat as fuck. There's nothing when you're traveling through that state. I've done that. It's the most boring area.
It is basically nothing but desert and coyotes, and that's it. Tumbleweeds.
Signs for how long you get to a more interesting part of the state.
Yeah. Like, that's it.
That's, you know, a lot of the Southwest.
Once you're outside of Dallas, that's basically everything you see for about 2 or 3 hours. But
that's why their cities are all huge.
Yeah.
Because there's nobody wants to be outside of them.
Yeah.
That can help it.
Yeah, so fortunately, that kind of ends our part of the show about all of that. It was just kind of a really shitty week for Americans because we have to go – we once again have to go through this song and dance again. And, you know, it just – we all – it wears all of us out.
Yeah.
Because
it's like, oh, this happens – the people on the left have their things to say. The people on the right have their things to say.
Yeah.
Fortunately, there was a crazy woman from Ohio that decided she's going to blame everything.
Yeah. We talked about her earlier. Yeah.
And it's like, all right, she just took it to a new level. And it's like,
yeah,
there's no way down from here. She has to just leave.
Yeah. And once again, I will say, the life of a child trumps whatever right you have to a firearm. So, you know, take your Second Amendment talk and shove it. But, yeah, anyway.
That's why we need somebody, a president, who has actual morals.
Yeah.
Because we need, like, a national buyback program. Let the people that have guns that no longer want all of them.
Yeah.
Could turn them in, get some money, like, good money, too.
Okay. But it can't be just that, though.
No, but that would be a big
part. I mean, it's a good idea, but it's gonna take, like, a whole series of programs to do it.
Oh, yeah.
But I think the drawback about buyback programs is that You have to put it at a price that's actually going to entice the people with the guns to turn them in to get paid.
I think we could easily do that. Just take that money out of the military's budget because they have
more
than enough. Mm-hmm. They're overpaying for lots of shit as they are. Might as well buy some guns from the people.
Anyway, so with that part out of the way, we can now commence to the rest of the show. The next story we got here. So
it could be worse than everything.
Yeah, kind of. So it's always been kind of a running joke in the United States. The creepy Boy Scout troop leader. Like it's been a running gag at least before I was even born. I mean, there was a whole SNL Adam Sandler thing about it that involved
Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, with Alec Baldwin. for those of you who don't remember, the Boy Scouts also had, like, for the longest time, like, for one thing, they had, like, the massive, like, thing about not having gays in Scouts.
Yeah.
Or not having anybody who wasn't religious in Scouts, you know? Like, actively kicking and purging people from the organization. And it's now come out that nearly 700 men are now suing the Boy Scouts of America over childhood sexual abuse.
And nobody is surprised.
Yep.
Unfortunately.
Nobody is surprised, but I do think people are surprised about the extent of it. Because that's a lot of people.
I mean, it's not unlike the Catholic Church's abuse of boys.
Yeah. Because much as with the Catholic Church, the organization actively tried to suppress news of it and move troop leaders around.
Yeah. Yeah, and it sort of seems like, okay, you got any large organization where you have grown men in charge of young boys, there's probably some shit going on.
Yeah. I actually
would not. It's been going on for so long.
I'm wondering if, because a lot of people may not know this, but for the longest time, the Boy Scouts of America, do you know who their biggest funder was? It was the LDS Church. Latter-day Saints, the Mormons.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder if they're going to get dragged into this.
Probably.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Damn, I wish Pat was with us. I want to know what he would...
Oh, there you are.
Yo.
Oh, there he is. Did you hear all of that?
I did not. Where are we at?
Oh, yeah. We're at the Boy Scouts of America part. Yeah.
Okay.
So... Like we just said, there's nearly 700 men who are suing the organization for childhood sexual abuse.
Uh-huh.
And then I mentioned, do you know who up until recently was the Boy Scouts of America's biggest funder?
That would be the LDS Church.
And that's what I was to say. I wonder if
they were involved.
Yeah, which makes me wonder if they're going to get dragged into this too.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. They've since washed their hands of the organization, but...
Yeah, famously after they started admitting LGBT members.
Yep.
But you were a Boy Scout when that was the...
When the church ran the Utah branches, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. My dad was a Scout, too. He was an Eagle Scout. I don't think anybody touched him, though.
Hmm.
But that was back in, like, the 60s, though. So, but... Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, from what you've told us about what the culture is like in the LDS Church, it seems like these guys, if it did happen, would probably have wanted to sort of not only suppress it, but like move people around.
Oh, yeah, they'd totally sweep it under the rug.
Yeah.
I like this quote from the attorney who's gathered these claims. This organization is so full of child molesters that if you weren't sexually molested in scouting, you were just lucky. The Boy Scouts should not exist anymore.
I know that shouldn't be funny, but fuck.
Like the scale of what he's suggesting there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, if it's really that bad, they really need to just straight fold the organization, period.
Just like, probably safer to burn it.
Yeah, burn it and then salt the ashes.
Yeah.
Just.
And that's where you need the Girl Scouts to kind of grow there.
Yeah, just get the Girl Scouts, because the Girl Scouts are actually a good organization. Yeah. They actually are quite good.
And they would probably
and just make them become the new mainstream scouting organization for America.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, just don't make it a gender segregated thing anymore. Just, yeah.
Well, the Boy Scouts were moving in that direction, and then this happened.
Yeah. It would be best to just sort of fold the organization into
burn it, salt it. Yeah.
At this point, but yeah. So now that all four of us are on, we're going to go back up here, and we're going to talk a bit about what we've been up to this week.
Oh, you didn't do that part.
No, we didn't. We decided to skip that until all four of us were here. But anyway, so first things first. Phil, what have you been up to this week?
I'm still going through The Way of Kings. I'm like,
yeah,
which is a long-ass book. I'm like, so about maybe almost two-thirds of the way through, I guess. Yeah, it's it's damn good. Even though like I know exactly what's going to happen, I'm still picking up on some stuff that that Brandon had like sown really early on that won't ever get paid off until like the third book. So it's like, whoa, that's some forethought there. Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, when Bill was talking last week about how batshit crazy this whole series gets, he wasn't lying, because there is some straight common writer shit and stuff.
It is seriously one of the best fantasy series I've ever read, and yeah, I just can't wait to read more of it. Like, but and the next book's going to be coming out next year, so yeah, looking forward to that. Apart from that, I've been playing and getting my review done for Metal Wolf Chaos, and that's up on the site. I kind of equated it to a pub crawl. It starts off pretty rowdy and then gets progressively crazier by the end of it. You don't remember anything that happened past the first hour. And then you wake up in the middle of a wheat field wondering why you're wearing a ballet tutu and a football helmet. That's pretty much Metal Wolf Chaos. It's just batshit insane.
A wheat field's never a good sign.
No.
Yeah. Especially if it's like...
And you would say it's aged pretty well for a game that's like 15 years old at this point that never came out here?
It's aged. Let's put it that way.
It's aged, but the thing about it is that the sheer insanity of it kind of, at the same time, makes it not quite as... It's definitely looks aged, but...
I mean, it's still very playable. It's got a lot of, like...
The sheer craziness gives it a timelessness.
But I mean, it's like, if you're expecting something where you're doing really precise aiming and crap like that, it's not a Call of Duty shooter, really. You've got a really, really generous auto-aim window. So that makes, you know, dealing with, you know, swarms of enemies really, really easy. But it also kind of adds to the fact that, you know, you're in a giant mech. You should be able to just mow down a bunch of foot soldiers or whatevers. So, you know, it gets that really well, which I guess, you know, shouldn't really be too surprising given that it's from Software. And, you know, up until that point, they had been doing Armored Core games. So they're kind of already well-versed with the third-person mech combat.
Yeah. Of course, the thing about Metal Wolf Chaos is that game... when did that game originally come? I think it was 2004, right? Yeah, that was part of, like, the last gasp of, like, Japanese gaming insanity.
And it was English when it was released in Japan, so just there was no real reason it didn't have to come over here.
But it was supposedly going to be published by Microsoft when it did come over here. Unfortunately, a week after Metal Wolf Chaos released is when Mech Assault 2 released. So they would have had to basically delay Metal Wolf Chaos for a few months. And by then, the 360 was already like less than a year away. So it kind of really didn't make sense.
Well, because Microsoft couldn't get that sixth generation behind it fast
enough.
And
in Japan, the Xbox wasn't particularly successful anyway. So it was just one of those games that it just kind of got lost. But now
it's true,
and it's, you know, if you like Japanese crazy, play this game because it is all that.
Yeah,
and it has
it is pretty much nothing but Japanese crazy. It is basically how the Japanese view America. Like, if you want America, you want, like, Japanese, like, if you were to make a game about America, what would it look like? You either get this or you get Earthbound.
It also has some of the best, worst voice acting ever. So it's got that. And it's been fully remastered, so...
Yeah. I think I remember the scene where the... Is it the vice president leaves and yells, Richard! Vice president.
Yeah.
Dick! It's like, of course, Dick.
So... But but apart from that, well, I've been trying not to melt, which has been
How hot has it gotten up there?
Into the 90s, which is weird and not should not happen in Canada.
For Canada, that's definitely weird.
The air conditioner has been struggling at times, right now, like. The thunderstorm seems to have kind of doused most of it. It's not so hot anymore.
Oh, just wait for the humidity.
So I'm waiting for that to roll through. Probably, if it keeps up, there may be tornado warnings. I don't know. But so far, I've been looking at the map, and it looks okay. It's been one of those really weird weeks where... I've just been doing mostly the same. It's kind of been.
Yeah.
How about you, Pat?
All right. What about you, Pat?
I've been working on World Warriors stuff, just gathering up some match videos specifically for Killer Instinct at the moment in preparation for the first big video library update since realigning the site this weekend. And so that's been... getting the bulk of my time. I've also been reading the X-Men reboot, as I know you have as well, Brandon. House of X number 2, holy shit, right?
Yep. Extremely holy shit.
So, where do we want to start with this?
Okay, so, I guess just very briefly with the first issue, just sort of get idea of what this sort of reboot of the X-Men franchise is about. It's being written by Jonathan Hickman, and for those who've never read any of Hickman's comics before, he basically is a comic writer who doesn't just plan for the trades, he basically plans for the omnibus. He writes his scripts out well in advance of when the issue actually releases.
He's basically been given the keys to the franchise.
Yeah, and basically the whole idea here is that... technically, all of X-Men up to this point is now technically canon. And the way that this happens is because there's this one woman who is apparently one of the original mutants.
All these years we thought she was just their human scientist friend.
Yeah, no, she is not only one of the original mutants, she's arguably the original mutant. And her mutant power is reincarnation. To an extent. Because basically every time she dies, the timeline kind of cycles back around, and she ends up sort of reliving everything that she remembers from her past life. And all the knowledge that she gained from it. So this means that she's behind everything from like the first run of the X-Men back when, they all had the matching blue and yellow uniforms to, the all new X-Men that started in the 70s, which is where probably the most famous part of the X-Men started, back to the 90s reboot, the Age of Apocalypse, the mutant uprising, all of that shit. And she ends up finding out through Destiny. For those of you who don't know Destiny, she's like one of the original, I guess you call them the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants or whatever.
Yeah.
She's Mystique's partner.
Yep.
In every sense of that word. And the thing is, she basically has perfect precognition. And she's the first person to actually recognize this woman's power. And she's also the one who tells her that this power is an infinite. She's only got so many lives that she can live before she dies for real.
Well, because because her weakness is that if in any of these timelines she gets killed before her mutant power manifests, she doesn't reincarnate.
Yeah. Which is why if you started this first one, it's like, wait, why are all these people like suddenly friends now?
Now it starts to make sense.
Yeah, because we've now started a new timeline, and they've also sort of changed Charles Xavier's like whole view of what mutants should do. He's no longer content going with the sort of integration Martin Luther King route. He has actually discovered a whole new dimension, and he has decided that he's going to allow all the mutants to go there. It's kind of like the old Genosha storyline, when Magneto was running it. And, it's basically like a home specifically for mutants. That, you know, humans can, you know, and it's not like they're completely cutting off humanity from it. Humans can still go into this dimension and even live there if they want, but there are areas that are regarded as no-go zones. That only mutants can enter. And it's setting up a really fascinating storyline because where is all this going to go?
Well, I don't think this is the timeline we're going to settle on for one thing.
No.
I think what's, I don't know how it's going to end, but I get the sense that whatever happens, the Brotherhood is going to decide that Moira got it right.
Mm-hmm.
And then Destiny's going to go back to whenever and kill Moira before her mutant power manifests.
Yep.
So she can't screw with it anymore. I'm pretty sure that's how this is going to end. I don't know what the end result is going to be. But I said from the beginning that I don't expect that the timeline we saw in House of X number one is going to be the long-term status quo.
Yeah.
And now they've since this is Moira the 10th setting this up pretty much guarantees it.
Yeah, her name's Moira X. For that's weirdly apt, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Chris, what about you? What have you been up to this week?
Oh yeah. So I've been watching Red versus Blue. I had my 10th anniversary set with all 10 seasons. I got three of them right now, but that's been fun. Kind of not really too much more to say about it, but I've been watching some more stuff on the Rooster Teeth site, mostly Immersion, mm-hmm. which is their like Mythbusters style show, but like testing like things that are in games.
Mm-hmm.
From them doing some basic stuff like trying to figure out how to get like a third person view for driving a car,
mm-hmm.
Kind of stuff like that. So I think some of the cooler stuff they did is they set up like a real version of Five Nights at Freddy's set and had like people in suits doing the creepy stuff as they sort of switch between views and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty cool. But yeah, that's some good stuff there. I think I've been playing a lot this week is Fallout 4.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of just you know, take my time going through it. I'm like level 22, I think, right now.
Mm-hmm.
About to do some good stuff with Nick Valentine. I think so far is like one of my favorite people in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of just going at it slow, kind of doing my hoarding thing where I comb an entire place I'm going through for a quest.
Mm-hmm.
Get all the stuff. Usually it's too much for me to carry all at once. I find a place to stash it near the door. And just kind of dump enough so I can get warping back to the home place. Just kind of keep going back and forth, bring everything with me and get all my stuff. So I'm kind of getting in a good place for my guns that I don't really need to keep upgrading them so much. Because my thing I was having issues with is just being low on screws for upgrading guns. Then I just ran into somebody and just bought some. It's like, you know what, screw, trying to find the one or two items that give me screws. I just bought a shipment of like 25 of them, and I upgraded my stuff, and I'm in a good place with the gun stuff. Now it's just, you know, leveling up, getting my perks that I want, and just keep going. So far, it has not been too much of trouble. just more having to keep an eye out for my health when I run into areas. Like sometimes I just forget to pay attention and just die for no reason. Other than just not paying attention. But yeah, I've been doing some streaming this week. Did not stream on Sunday because I just was not feeling great then. But on Tuesday, I streamed some Sniper Elite 4 since that was on PlayStation Plus. And yeah, that game is a lot of fun. I got a few good nut shots in there.
Oh yeah, that's always the best part of those games.
Yeah, and I got one of the trophies that's for you knock them down, then shoot them in the testicles while they're on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a pretty good shot to do. And got plenty like shooting them in the head, some just caving their whole jaw, stuff like that. It's like, oh god, I'm glad I'm not a Nazi here.
Yep.
Yeah, I got to the second area, which is much harder up front because there's no patches of tall grass that you can hide in for a bit. So you kind of have to actually – I did the stupid thing trying to take everybody out before I moved on. I should have just moved on around people because once you get to the patch of grass is where you can actually start to look around and start to mark people and all that. That's where you got like a boat that's hanging around. It's like provides your main source of noise to cover your shots, but also kind of just where you start taking shots and just moving around a lot more. But yeah, that's been that was good to put some time into. Also streamed some Cook Serve Delicious 2 because they just announced the third game, and that game is on sale right now for I think half off, about $6.49 on Switch, PS4, and Steam. That game's a lot of fun. It's also a very stressful game because you are basically taking orders in, and some of the early places you're working at have like three or four main items. And usually it's pretty simple stuff, but a lot of it is just you have to hold down. You have to go take the order, and then it was like, okay, I want a burger with, you know, cheese, bacon, mushrooms, and this kind of bun. You have to, you know, click the right buttons, and occasionally, like by the end, I was just making mistakes just from misreading things. And I was also decided to take on Chinese food, mm-hmm. which is very complicated to make. Cause you,
oh yes,
pick the sauce to cook it in, then put mm-hmm. the food in, just let that cook for a bit, and we take it out. Okay, now you got to pick another sauce, then whatever toppings they want on there, and then you put it away. And it's like I just kept hitting the wrong things mm-hmm. over and over again because different types of foods have different sauces, so they're not the same. So I was like, oh, that sauce, that's this one. It's like, oh, wait, no, that's not it. Oh, fuck. And I just serve it to them anyway because it's like, this is authentic Chinese. Just fucking up your orders left and right. they were not taking it, the game was. He was like, we expect you to actually be good. It's like, oh, I don't know about that. That's not authentic Chinese food as far as I'm concerned. But, yeah, that game's a lot of fun. And especially there's a lot of fun, like, email stuff in there where – you move into this new building. Basically, the whole story is that the restaurant from the original game burnt down. And so you're kind of moving into a new tower to work in. But there's also a bunch of other businesses there. So you kind of have the ability to work at a bunch of different places to get some money or try out different kinds of foods to see like what you might want to put in your own restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Which then I started working on my own restaurant, like building out the menu. And I didn't realize I was buying a lot of side stuff. Which initially I could only have one. So I was like, I'm going to build a breakfast place. Like, here's eggs, here's hash browns, you know, different kinds of stuff you'd have for that. And I could only have one of them. So I was like, oh, eggs. And then realized, like, the main entrees I ended up having was cereal, like pretzels, and Salisbury steak. And then coffee. And that was kind of what I was – my dumb restaurant had. Which I guess it kind of makes sense a little bit, and that like you start with the breakfast stuff, and as you get later in the day, okay, here's the Salisbury steak thing. But some people order that in the morning
mm-hmm.
For whatever reason. But yeah, there are different kinds of cereals that you have to pick, whether they want milk or what kinds of fruit they want on there, all that sort of stuff. The fun thing was working at the ice cream place because I get the different orders, and like, okay, they want butter pecan with strawberry sauce and nuts. Like, this person's evil. Just keep judging everybody based on their ice cream orders. Because it's like, oh, this person is evil because they're ordering all the worst shit.
Mm-hmm.
when the people pick things like, oh, this is a nice person, we're going to give you extra. I can't really give them extra, but, you know, that sort of thing. But yeah, that game's a lot of fun, and you're building a restaurant up, and mine looks real stupid because I don't have that much. But yeah, the third game's going to be crazy because it's essentially set in the future, like 2042. You're running a food truck with robots. Yeah. And so you're kind of driving down the highway, taking orders as people are like shooting at you and all this shit. And it's like way over the top and ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
That seems like it's going to be pretty good. And that's going to be in Steam Early Access in January.
Yep.
And yesterday we streamed DuckTales Remastered because that game is getting delisted.
Yep.
I was like, I want to play some of this before people have their last chances to buy it.
Yeah.
And that game is hard as fuck. We have not
much
finished
like
a single
the original.
Level. I tried four levels over the course of 2 hours and failed all of them.
That is authenticity.
Yeah. Yep. The one of them I even got to a boss fight that I think was towards the end of the level and just failed there. I had zero lives and like two hearts. And it's like, yeah, this is not going to go well. And just some bullshit enemies. The ghost in the Transylvania level.
Yep.
That are very much like the flying enemies in Castlevania.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, you can't actually kill them, so they're just there to fuck with you. Yeah, that sucked. The game's so fun. It looks really nice. It's a shame they never brought that to the current consoles. Like, it's literally Xbox 360, PS3, and Wii U, and PC, if you want there. Yeah. And it's like, the story bits they have in there are way too long for what they need to be. Because it's always situations like, oh, we're going to go here to the African mines, and the kids stole along, and, or no, in Transylvania, the kids are with you, and you tell them to stay, and of course they don't listen, and they get trapped, and then they get taken away to other parts of the level.
Which is pretty, I mean, let's be honest, for an average episode of the original show, that's...
Yeah, that happens like all the time.
Yeah. But I explain that in 20 seconds, and it takes them like 5 minutes to do it, to work that all out. And it's like, oh, God, it's great you got all the original voice actors and all that, but geez, call this down a little bit. I guys tried to skip past it, and the game just stopped doing anything. It just went to
How'd you like the soundtrack?
It's great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was... Like, initially just setting up the stream, I just left it hang on the opening.
Yeah.
Capcom USA learned a lot from the Japanese branch.
Yeah.
Around that time.
Yeah, and that game, at this point, it's done. If you didn't get it, you lost your chance.
Pretty much.
You managed to get one of the physical versions that are out there.
Remastered version. If you, if you get Disney Afternoon Collection, then you get the original.
Yeah. I think it's on sale for $5 on PSN, the whole collection. Yeah.
That's a good sale.
Which I assume there is safe states in that. Sure. Okay. That's what would have been nice in this. Because there are lots of situations where you're like, fuck, I had three lives. And now I'm near the end of the level. I have zero. And at some point, I'm not going to finish this. At some time, it's like, all right, we had like 1.3 million. And now we got none of it. Yeah, the Himalayas was pretty fun because you get to... they just crash the plane, and you have to get the parts back. And, of course, the rabbits are assholes and steal them and break them apart.
Yep.
Somehow know how to disassemble it so you can put it back together.
Yeah.
But, you know, don't just leave it alone. They know that you want it, but are mechanically savvy enough to take it apart efficiently. And then I got it back, and it's like, all right, let's go to the next part. And I think that's where you have the boss fight on the plane. And that's where I lost. I was like, well, fuck, it's 2 hours of no progress. There's a reason why I haven't played that game in 5 years. Because it's all bullshit. And that's been pretty much it for this week.
All right. Well, as for me, it's still Fire Emblem. I finished the campaign with the Black Eagles. So I immediately started a new game with a different house. Which, as by the way... absolutely is worth it because There are, in fact, big parts of the story that you don't see depending on which house you're in. So, like, for, like, in the Black Eagles, later on in the Black Eagle storyline, you know, Dimitri, the guy who's the head of the Blue Lions, the blonde guy with the blue eyes, yeah, at some point he goes completely freaking insane. And turns into a bloodthirsty lunatic. And, you don't really figure out why when you're doing the Black Eagles route, but I'm doing the Golden Deer route now, and I'm thinking maybe I'll find out something more. Apparently, the Golden Deer routes and the Blue Lion routes are actually a little longer than the Black Eagle route is. Partly because with the Black Eagles route, you don't have as many factions to fight, necessarily. But, yeah, yeah, this is definitely, for right now, this is definitely going to be my game of the year. Like, just straight up. I've already sort of started working on my review for that one, and hopefully I'll have it up sometime next week. There's a lot to go over. Apparently this game is probably... I think of all the Fire Emblem games I've played so far, this is probably the one that is the most accessible from the beginning. It also does a lot more to build characters and world building than a lot of the other games do, even though all the other Fire Emblem games are great. This one probably has the best writing of literally any of the other Fire Emblem games I've played, and I've played a few. And I do believe that the comparison to Genealogy of the Holy War is 100% valid, because it's about
see as that dark. In and of itself gets me excited.
Yeah, because it's about as dark as that as Genealogy of the Holy War is. Partly because, I mean, a lot of it really does have to do with the fact that, you know, for one thing, there is no golden ending in this game. There is no ending where all of the people that you want to save survive and the bad guy dies. You know, it doesn't matter what route you take, at some point you're going to have to kill some of the people that you helped taught at the beginning of the game. There's no way around it. Damn, it is so good. I 100% recommend it if you can get your hands on it. Other than that, still going into the light novels route. I recently discovered that next year, the J Novel Club, which is one of the people that help like translate and put, you know, various Japanese light novels on Amazon for like electronic. They also, you know, do physical copies as well. And I found out last night that they're going to be publishing a imitation leather hardbound edition of Crest of the Stars, specifically all three of the first book of the books into one volume, which, I mean, technically the original book is just set over three volumes, but definitely something I've been wanting to, especially because it's going to get an all new translation. For those who read the original series back when Tokyopop were the ones that were releasing it, that's going back a ways, isn't it? it's a different translator, because the original translations for the Tokyopop ones are just garbage. But yeah, I'm still reading 86. Again, amazing book. I highly recommend it. Weirdly prescient, because it has a lot to do with the story of how there is a republic called the Republic of San Magnolia, which, you know, it prides itself on the values and its five-hued flag, which are, you know, liberty, equality, justice, compassion, and nobility. And then they get invaded by an outside empire, and they immediately decide that a whole segment of their population are possible fifth columnists. And so they basically exile them into what's called the 86th sector, which is basically an enormous city-sized concentration camp. And They basically force them to, if they want to get out, they basically have to join the military for 10 years. And they end up fighting these drones called the Legion that the Empire sent out to try and fight the Republic. Any of this sounding familiar?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like that. And of course, there's, just anime as well. I've been watching, amongst other things, I forgot what this anime is about, but it's basically all about girls lifting weight, the anime.
Okay. That's...
As despite what it sounds like, they actually do, like, a lot of, like, good information in there about working out and exercise and stuff like that and good diet. And, like, going against certain stereotypes, like the type of stretches you do before you start a workout. Stuff like that. But it's also mostly an excuse to see anime girls get all stripped down, sweaty, and start lifting weights.
Because Japan.
And because anime. So... definitely good. Yeah, that's pretty much it. So with that out of the way, we'll go back to where we originally, and it's going to be this, story right here.
Hey,
Brandon. Before we Missouri do that, we got an update for the Missouri, Walmart story.
Yeah. So you will say immediately, fuck this guy after I say this. Here's his probable cause statement. I wanted to know if Walmart honored the Second Amendment.
Yeah, this guy.
Yeah, he basically wanted to walk in wearing body armor and carrying a loaded rifle and handgun to test whether Walmart would honor his constitutional right to bear arms.
I have a secret. I have a theory that really he just wanted to cause shit.
Yeah, he's... 20, I think. He has a wife. Her name is Angelise. Mm-hmm. She told investigators that she warned him it was not a good idea, adding that he was an immature boy. Even asked his sister, Anastasia, mm-hmm. said he asked her if she would videotape him going into Walmart with a gun, and she also told him it was a bad idea. So he is an idiot for not listening to two people in his life tell him you should not do this.
Yeah.
He said his intention was to buy grocery bags. The rifle had a loaded magazine inserted, but not chambered. A handgun on his right hip was loaded with one round in the chamber. Yeah, he was started to record himself with his phone while he was still in the car parked at Walmart. He got the body armor from the trunk of his car, put it on before grabbing a shopping cart and walking into the store.
Oh, just... extremely.
So not really intending to shoot anybody, but definitely intending to scare the shit out of everybody.
Mm-hmm. What an idiot.
To prove a point.
Yeah.
Well, they took him alive, so I'm guessing he's white.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Of course he is. But yeah. All right, so anyway. Some of you guys may remember earlier this year of a Caesar Sayoc. It was the guy they called the MAGA bomber. He was the guy who sent a bunch of mail bombs to the offices of various Democratic Party senators and congresspeople, party officials, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Now, fortunately, none of these explosive devices actually went off and nobody was harmed. But, of course, it is still attempted murder. So he was sentenced this week to 20 years in prison.
And 5 years of probation.
Yep, which is the absolute least he deserves.
Yeah.
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 Well, he's probably going to general, right?
Probably. All right. So after that, next story. The two of the biggest newspaper publishers in the United States, Gatehouse and Gannett, have announced this week that they are going to merge to form the largest newspaper chain in the United States.
Yeah, by a considerable margin.
Oh, yes.
I think it said in here something like they were going to have a circulation of like 8.7 million papers. Mm-hmm. And the closest new number two is 1.7 million. So it's three or four times bigger.
Completely irrelevant because that's a dying media anyway.
Yeah, but also they are looking to generate $200 to $300 million in annual cost savings, which means they're going to probably be cutting people at some point in the near future.
Probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, the newspaper, the physical newspaper at least, is a dying medium. I would not expect – I would actually expect to see it completely die within our lifetimes. Probably even sooner than that. I mean, let's be honest. You know, as far as like regular newspapers goes, the internet has basically completely overtaken that almost. Unless you're like live in one of those in like a big city or something, your newspaper is basically dead.
Yeah. I mean, most of the big papers have like their websites anyway where they post their stories. So there's that. A lot of people just use tablets. Yeah. To read their stuff.
Yep. Yeah, I would not be surprised if they essentially try to be on Kindles and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially get your subscription through there to get the digital version.
Yeah, that's gonna happen. The idea of, like, you know, printing these papers on dead trees and then delivering them to people every day or week. That's quaint, 18th century.
That's very much the classic, like, kid job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, delivering newspapers. That was very much the kid job.
Now adults do it because they can be up at 4 in the morning to deliver them.
Yeah.
And they need the money.
Yeah.
Just sad.
Next up, and this was a story I added because I cannot believe – unfortunately, I know people like this. So there's the Whitney Plantation. Well, not the Whitney Plantation. I think it was another plantation. There's some reviews for people going to this plantation tour for these reviews that they put up that have gone viral. And the reason is because of how just how unbelievably clueless they are. Read you this first one, okay? This is on Twitter, by the way. All right, it was a 2-star review. And just to point out, the tour guide was actually a white person. So just keep that in mind. Are you ready? All right, this is the review. It's a 2-star review. My husband and I were extremely disappointed in this tour. We didn't come to hear a lecture on how the white people treated slaves. We came to get this history of a southern plantation and get a tour of the house and grounds. I can already hear you groaning. The tour guide was so radical about slave treatment, we felt we were being lectured and bashed about slavery. My ancestors were from Sicily, never owned slaves, and my husband's were German, and none of his ever owned slaves. I am by far not a racist or against all Americans having equal rights, but this was my vacation, and now we are crossing all plantation tours off our list. It was just not for what we expected. I'll go back to Louisiana and see some real plantations that are so much more enjoyable to tour.
I got nothing.
So where is she? Where are they going to find a plantation that didn't have slaves?
That's what, like, that was okay. So let me just give you some context here. Where I live here in Macon, when I was a kid, we would take field trips over to the Gerald Plantation, which is a plantation that's not terribly far away from where my school was located. And they never, like, you know, they never glossed over anything. They just made it very clear this is how it worked. You know, and the thing is, Gerald Plantation was actually one of the smaller ones. You know, unlike the plantation we've got, they're talking about here, which is like huge and, you know, has like all these slave quarters and stuff. You know, ours was small, but they didn't gloss over the fact that, oh yeah, this thing was totally worked by slaves and here's where they lived and this is where they got their water, and this is where they grew their food, and, you know, this is where they worked, and all that stuff. And you know, and I see reviews like this, and all I'm thinking is like, what the hell do you think a plantation was for?
It's like going to somebody the Holocaust Museum, and they'll be
It's like going.
Wow,
to,
why they keep talking shit about Hitler?
Yeah, it's like that's going. Unfair. That's what some folks on Twitter said. They said, "But that's like going to take a tour at Auschwitz in Poland and going, wow, why did I wanted to go there to learn about Auschwitz? I didn't want them to talk up so much about genocide." I'm like,
yeah.
What did you think this was? Look, that is literally the sole reason those plantations got so big in the first place.
Yep.
And, like, you know, that because they were entirely built on slave labor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's like taking everything a tour about them, the businesses they grew, it were, you know, the businesses they grew, they funded through slavery. The communities they founded on the foundations of slavery. All of this shit ties back to slavery. You kind of can't go to a plantation in the southern United States and not talk about slavery. It's like the whole purpose of why they existed.
Yeah, it's like if you took a vehicle tour through any old city that was about the history of the city, and they talked about which buildings were built by slaves.
Yeah.
Like, why do they keep talking about slavery?
I had a friend.
Maybe the history of your town is slaves.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine, him and his family went and took a tour. They went to Virginia, and they went and took a tour at Monticello, which, you know, that's Thomas Jefferson's old house.
Mm.
And if you've – I don't know if – have any of you guys been to Monticello in the last 10 years or so? Because in the last – well, in the last 10 years or so, both the caretakers of Monticello and the Jefferson family have gotten more open about talking about – know Jefferson's slave ownership and you know how they worked and were treated at Monticello. And one of the first things you see when you go into Monticello proper is a statue of Thomas Jefferson, and behind him is like this huge wall that has the names of all the people that he owned at one time or another. Some of them don't even have proper names because they don't have the records for them. And, you know, he enjoyed it, but his grandma kept complaining after the tour, kept complaining about how they harped so much on the slavery thing. I'm like, you know, you can't ignore it. I mean, that's how Monticello, you know, he was born into the Southern plantation aristocracy. That's why he was so rich to begin with. That's how he was able to afford all of his trips over to France and everything.
But, it just kind of amazes me, like,
these
people who lived a really really sheltered life can go there and completely miss the point of the place that they're going to.
You know what they want, what they're looking for? They're looking for Gone with the Wind. That's what they're looking for. They want to experience Gone with the Wind, and instead they get Roots. And, And, you know, when did it become the point where people mistook empathy for guilt? Like these, you notice in this passage, she keeps talking about, it's like, look, my family didn't own slaves. We had nothing to do with slavery. And I'm like, so why are you so upset about it? You know, they weren't talking specifically to you.
And they weren't like, fuck these two people over here. They fucking own slaves. Their ancestors did.
No. Again, like I said, there are too many people who mistake empathy for guilt.
Yeah.
You know, I have to believe that because I have ancestors who were slave owners. But, God damn it. I swear. Anyway, next up, Pizza Hut. Pizza Hut is not doing too well right now. And they recently announced that they're closing about 500 dine-in locations all over the country.
Yeah. Yeah, not really a surprise because I was in one like a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Not to actually eat anything there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like around noon, so there's nobody there.
Yep.
It's like, why is this place open?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's buying anything even in the afternoon, even though it was like the middle of the week, but still, like, you would think somebody would be there.
Yeah.
They're just, like, prepping for when it gets later on to that business actually picks up.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, they're probably the bulk of their business in the morning is just delivery or pickup.
Yeah.
And that's seems like what they're realizing is like, yeah, we need to shut down these dine-in areas because they're not making the money to justify the space.
Most people, like, I don't know many people who would actually seek out a Pizza Hut to go eat there.
Well, there's more. There's just more places to get pizza now.
But I mean, if you want pizza and you know,
better quality,
you know, there's a Pizza Hut around the corner. You're just gonna pick up the phone or open the app and get it that way. You're not gonna go there and sit there and eat it there. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah,
yeah. I imagine it's probably for parents to just like, I don't want to fucking clean up after them.
We'll just understand like justifying have one at like a tourist destination because like you know like having one like next to because. When me and my family went to Disney World a few years ago, you know, they had a Pizza Hut that was next to the entrance into the park. And see, that makes sense.
A lot of foot traffic there.
Anyway.
Yeah, and I have some that are just real small buildings that are, you know, just where they take the orders. Mm-hmm. You go pick it up or go through the drive-thru or whatever.
Yeah. At most, they may have two tables off to the side somewhere.
Yeah. For those losers.
Mm-hmm. Next, more news in fast food. Subway is introducing a Beyond Meatball Marinara sub with plant-based protein meatballs. This is sort of like the same move where people are making the, you know, meat-free entrees like that.
Well, I've had Subway's original meatball marinara sub, and this might be an improvement because the meatballs that they have were kind of flavorless, so you can't really go much lower than that.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it's going to be available for a limited time at 685 participating restaurants starting in September. Similar to the original, plant-based Beyond Meat meatballs. Drenched in marinara sauce, provolone cheese, grated Parmesan cheese on toasted. 24 grams of protein per 6-inch sub.
I like that they're getting more of a reach now. I mean, there's companies that are willing to give them a try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This bodes well.
It makes sense for Subway, especially when
companies are kind of I think a lot of these companies are starting to sort of see the writing on the wall and where you know both. The meat industry and meat consumption is going in the near future. Thanks to just both changing tastes and climate change. So they're that's sort of like a midway point between then and there. Also it gets you the vegetarian bucks. And, if you got a good vegetarian option, they'd pay out the ass for it.
Yeah. It's sort of like consoles offering, you know, physical and digital ways to play games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I might as well offer both.
Yeah. All right. Next up, news. The NCAA has announced that they're instituting new rules for agents so that they can keep the NBA's biggest agent away from undergrads.
Yep. So basically, the new rules requires a bachelor's degree.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to do a background check and certification through the NCAA for this. These are specifically for players that are not 100% sure they want to go into the draft. So they go through like the testing process and talking to teams and such and see if they are going to go high enough that they think it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Rich Paul is basically one of the biggest agents in the game, but does not have a college degree.
Mm-hmm.
Basically one of LeBron's friends from high school kind of came out with him. But he has a number of the biggest athletes in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that his group ended up getting acquired by the United Talent Agency, one of the biggest out there. And he's kind of a big player in the NBA, and they're basically putting these rules in to keep him out.
Yeah, because NCAA really doesn't like competition in any way, shape, or form.
Nope.
Yeah. Oh. Which they say they want to emphasize people with college degrees talking to athletes that have not gotten it yet.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Which, like, most of them aren't there for that, really.
Mm-hmm.
That is by the scandals about fake classes and all that sort of shit.
Yeah. So, next up, we got some science news. Some scientists actually managed to bake some sourdough bread. And I was like, okay, so what's the big deal? The yeast that they used was yeast that was retrieved from 4,500 years. No, yeah, 4,500 years ago. So 4,500 years ago.
Yeah. And it comes from ancient Egyptian pottery that they managed to cultivate some of this from. And this isn't like their final stuff. They're just like doing initial tests with what they've been able to get out of it.
Yep.
Because they're trying to get these dormant bacteria and such reinvigorated.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, there's like a whole Twitter thread about this whole thing. It's pretty cool to read. But yeah, like they used a non-destructive process and careful sterile technique. They believe they can actually capture dormant yeast and bacteria from inside the ceramic pores of ancient pots, sampled beer and bread-making objects, which had actually been in regular use in the Old Kingdom. They took many samples, continued to build our sample library over the next year or so. As they sort of get the different cultures and such they can get out of there. But they went through the process. After a week of feeding and carefully culling, the sample is bubbly and ready to be tried baking with. All the grains used here are ancient, organic, and milled freshly, which barley and einkorn and kamut.
Mm-hmm.
Modern wheat was invented long after these organisms went to sleep.
Yeah.
Here's a large batch of starter, carefully made from the Old Kingdom sample, added to water and some unfiltered olive oil. That is make a dough with identical ingredients to what the yeast ate 4,500 years ago. The aroma of this yeast is unlike anything I've ever experienced. Crazy ancient dough fermented and rose beautifully. Here's in the basket just for being turned out to bake. And yeah, they kind of used some conventional stuff at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But once it came out, they scored what looks like a D, but it represents the T sound in hieroglyph language, which is for a loaf of bread. It says aroma is amazing and new. It's much sweeter and more rich than the sourdough we are used to.
Yeah.
It's a big difference. And they tried it out, said the crumb is light and airy, especially for a 100% ancient grain loaf. The aroma and flavor are incredible. It's emotional. It's really different. You can easily tell, even if you're not a bread nerd.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very surprised it worked. And yeah, like, delicious science.
Yeah. This isn't the first time they've managed to do something with something like this. Years ago, they actually managed to do the same thing with honey. They found jars of honey that were stored away in a tomb in the Valley of the Kings. They opened it up, and obviously the honey wasn't in liquid form. It had basically turned into a block at that point.
Yeah.
But they actually like managed to melt it down, and it was completely edible.
Yeah.
So apparently, honey is like the one foodstuff in the world that does not spoil. Any, you know, if you find honey that was stored thousands of years ago, you can still eat it now.
Yeah. I don't know if you noticed who wrote these posts. Seamus Blackley, father of the Xbox.
Wow. Well,
he's so that's.
It's getting involved with ancient bread.
Yeah. Anyway, speaking of scientists doing food stuffs, a group of scientists actually managed to brew some vodka that was made from crops from the abandoned zone in Chernobyl. They turned into a vodka to sell for charity. And if you're thinking, oh my God, it wasn't that, no, yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's not like you're not. It's not radioactive or anything.
Yeah, though they appropriately named it Atomic with a K.
Of course they did.
Mm-hmm.
75% of profits from sales of Atomic will go to supporting communities in the affected areas and wildlife conservation.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they kind of just got these crops from the affected area. They're not radioactive or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So they're perfectly fine.
I could see a lot of people buying bottles of this and hanging on to it.
Yeah. I don't know what they're charging for. I don't know if they mention it here. Let's see. Not that I'm seeing here.
Mm.
But it's made by scientists from the UK.
Yeah.
So it could go up significantly if they're not selling this before Brexit
happens. Oh, yeah. That's also something that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. For the record, again, Brexit is something that they could just not do. You know, no one is, it was just a plebiscite, you know. But Boris Johnson is absolutely, But anyway, next up, there's a man in Alaska who was actually came across something that is almost a cliche, but actually happened. They found a message in a bottle. the bottle, the message is actually from a Soviet era ship from 1969.
Yep. Yeah, basically posted about it on his Facebook, said, I found a message in a bottle today. Any friends that are Russian translators out there?
Yeah.
He says, just walking, collecting firewood for a small fire, and came across the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Showed my children the bottle, and they were excited for me to open it. So I opened it up, saw it was in Russian. They asked me how Russian spoke, and I talked a little, like counting to 10 in Russian.
Mm-hmm.
So a small poem that I learned in Russian from when I was in high school, and I came home from our short boating trip, posted the photos online with a message, see if some friends could translate it. Soon got a bunch of translations.
Yeah.
The message was dated June 20th, 1969. Just a little over 50 years old.
Yep.
It begins with a heartfelt hello.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever finds this bottle, we ask you to tell the entire crew of the Sulak in the city of Vladivostok.
Mm-hmm.
We wish you good health, many years of life, and happy sailing.
Mm. Vladivostok, that's way out there.
Oh, yeah.
They basically figured out there were three decommissioned Sulaks built in 1964, 66, and 69, with the second vessel classified as a fish factory. Sulak appears to be a refrigerated cargo ship built in Japan, disbanded in 1992.
Huh. Well, that is fascinating.
So just for reference, Vladivostok is a coastal city along Russia's east coast near the border with North Korea.
So,
wow.
Why would somebody be throwing a message in a bottle out?
Let's see. It's 1969. It's the middle of the Cold War.
They were probably just bored.
This doesn't sound like one of those, I'm kind of fucked kind of messages.
Yeah. No.
It just seems like he's bored. He's got nothing else better to do. Maybe he probably knows that whatever's going on is bullshit.
Yeah.
She's like, I'll just throw this out here, see if something happens.
Yeah.
And so I think people are trying to see if they can figure out who wrote this.
Mm-hmm.
See if they can get in touch with him.
Yeah. If they're still alive, that is.
Yeah.
That is a hot minute ago.
Oh, yeah.
Years ago.
Yeah, this was probably a kid, though, when he wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody was saying, like, it's pretty good cursive Russian.
Mm-hmm.
Like, pretty legible for what you might expect.
Yep. All right. Next up, now we're in the entertainment portion, and first and foremost, we now know who's going to be directing the second Venom movie, and it's going to be Andy Serkis, which is not his first directorial outing, by the way. He's directed a couple movies before this. So
it has a chance of not being hot garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did the Mowgli Legend of the Jungle take on the on that
which
movie.
Which I like better than the Disney
and he also did a movie.
Yeah.
And he also did and he also did a movie called Breathe, which was I think like a rom com or something.
Yeah,
we'll see how it comes out.
Yeah,
I mean he certainly can't do any worse than the first one.
Wonder if they even
did really well.
Yeah,
$856 million.
A movie that made no goddamn sense.
Yeah. And he's a guy that knows about CG and performance capture.
Yep. And is a pretty good actor in and of himself, too. So,
yeah.
Next up, Disney. We got some Disney news. So, first and foremost, Disney has announced that they will be offering Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN Plus into a bundle for
$12.99. Okay.
That's just not too
Yeah, that's actually
bad.
A lot.
They could convince me to get in on that very easily.
Yeah, see, Hulu is the $6 with ads version. Not sure what ESPN Plus is, but I think Disney Plus is what, $8? $7 or $8. So it's like those two alone will get you pretty much this, and you get ESPN Plus for free. Which gets you a bunch of sporting stuff.
Yep.
If you're into that.
Yeah, this.
Especially like the full library of ESPN 30 for 30 films. Which is a great great sports documentary for people that are into documentaries.
Yeah.
You see, Disney Plus on its own didn't really seem, well, it's like it was appealing, but it was like, yeah, it's another subscription service that I would have to subscribe to. But you bundle in these other two, and it's like all of a sudden it seems, you know, this. Yeah,
it's actually a really good package.
So especially with all the TV stuff that's on Hulu and the original stuff that they're doing as well.
It's all the Disney stuff.
Yep.
Essentially. And yeah, they're pricing this to get under what Netflix and Amazon Prime Video does and HBO Max as well. So they're all creeping up because they're not. Well, Amazon's a huge company, but like Netflix is huge, but they're kind of one of those smaller, huge companies. That's like taking on lots of debt to keep going for what they're doing.
Yeah, that is.
Also, not the end of Disney news we got, because we also found out this week that Disney plans on rebooting a couple of franchises for Disney Plus. First is the Home Alone franchise.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
They've done that before. Yeah, it didn't.
Yeah, but they could put good people on this. Or it doesn't run out of ideas
theoretically.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of ran out of ideas after the first movie, because 2 was literally a retread of the first movie. Almost frame for frame.
I was watching Home Alone 2 one night. I had rented it, and it's like I could have sworn that I had rented the wrong movie. It was really like
backwards. Yeah. I do like John Mulaney's joke about that. It's like, you see this shit? Lost in New York? It's a grid system, motherfucker. Like, you wish he was a Def Jam comic when that movie came out.
Yeah. Also, they are rebooting Nine at the Museum.
Nobody understands.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, obviously, like, one of its most... one of the actors that are particularly important to that franchise, sadly, is no longer with us. So, Robin Williams. And lastly, they're doing a reboot of Wimpy Kids.
And the Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Yeah.
It also says here that they're looking to do a new, like, Cheaper by the Dozen. That's an old-ass movie.
Yeah. They better make a reboot Diary of a Wimpy Kid, because... After that first movie, which was only middling good to begin with, it went down went downhill pretty fast.
Yeah. So Bob Iger, Robert Iger, basically said they're also going to continue some of Fox's franchises, specifically like Planet of the Apes, and that Fox Searchlight will be making movies for Disney Plus. Though Disney will pare back the total number of releases from Fox's film divisions. They're still keeping the Brad Pitt space movie going. Let's see, the racing drama Ford versus Ferrari is also coming out in a few months. And while its 2020 releases include Amy Adams' thriller The Woman in the Window, Steven Spielberg's West Side Story, as I mentioned, James Cameron's Avatar sequels.
Which is the first one's supposed to come out next year. So
yeah, they talk a little bit about rumors about the Home Alone remake, which is could turn the tables and follow a husband and wife who go to war with a young boy who has stolen something from them, rather than the original premise of a young boy who goes to war with a pair of inept thieves looking to rob his house. Which that's Dennis the Menace.
Yeah, that's what I was supposed to say. Yeah, that's just Dennis the Menace. Yeah,
which I guess there's. Not really any Dennis the Menace. It's not really a hot property these days.
No.
It wasn't really hot when they made the movies, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's, like, looking through the different properties that Fox has, see what makes sense coming back, or maybe just keep going, all that sort of stuff. Which, yeah, those Planet of the Apes movies have been really good.
They've actually been getting better. So that's, you know, that's rare.
Mm-hmm. And let's see. Next up, we got some Netflix news. So Game of Thrones has officially ended. Not very well, but it ended. And what people had been wondering, you know, so now that it's over, where you know, the show creators, David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, where are they going to be going? I mean, we know that they're working on one of their trilogies, and there's still that, you know, Confederate project that they wanted to work on. Well, now we know what happened. They've signed an exclusive show, TV movie and TV show deal with Netflix.
Yep. Yeah, they were courted by six studios for an overall global deal to write, produce, and direct new series and films.
Mm-hmm.
They picked Netflix, and the rumor is that it's a nine-figure deal.
Ooh. Oh, yes.
In the range of some of the stuff they've done with, like, Shonda Rhimes and Ryan Murphy.
Wow.
Who are also exclusive to Netflix.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the deal for Benioff and Weiss, which you hear is for 5 years and about $300 million.
Mm-hmm.
Was brokered by their longtime attorney, Gretchen Rush.
I'm very, very, very curious to see what they do on Netflix, because these two are very, very talented. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Yeah.
And now they could be working on something completely original. So, you know, they wouldn't have to be working on a license, so that might be fun.
Yeah, because... You know, and of course, being with Netflix, it means that, you know, they can sort of, you know, make the kind of content that they could with HBO.
Yeah, more so.
Because
Netflix is not quite as prudish as most companies.
So, yeah, that's going to be fun to see what they do with that. And finally, Netflix, last story of the night, Netflix has announced that they are making a movie based around the Eurovision Song Contest. And it's going to be featuring Will Ferrell, Rachel McAdams, and Pierce Brosnan.
He's still here?
Yes, Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah. And he just looks like he always does, just gray hair now.
Yeah.
But yeah, the directed by David Dobkins.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just called Eurovision. The picture reunites Dobkin with the Wedding Crashers, Thespians, Will Ferrell, and Rachel McAdams, all of whom have been previously announced, who will be playing struggling Icelandic musicians Lars Eriksson, and Sigrid Eriksdóttir. Brosnan will star as Erik Eriksson, Lars' father and the most handsome man in Iceland, and the feature is being written by Ferrell and Andrew Steele. It's in production in the UK and Iceland.
Yeah, I'll give this one the benefit of the doubt, because the Eurovision contest is fucking insane to begin with. So a movie about it could be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Indeed. But, you know, until we actually see it, we won't really know.
But yeah, it's like if you told people like 10 years ago, oh, Will Ferrell's would have a big movie that is releasing entirely on Netflix. They'd be like, you're crazy.
Yeah.
It's like, that's how much these services have really elevated
themselves. Well, also because the last Will Ferrell movie wasn't particularly very good.
But he hasn't sunk to the Adam Sandler level yet.
No.
No. But, yeah, it's kind of just neat that, like, you can get these big names just purely because they, you know, want to do cool things wherever the wants to host them. And it's now these big services are more in vogue than just going to the theater.
Despite what Steven Spielberg says, streaming services should be eligible for Oscars.
It was only until his streaming service got announced that he was critical of the others.
Apple.
Anyway. All right. Well, we got ourselves a show, folks. And a hell of a one it was. Oh, God, this was not a fun week at all. Anyway,
this week just shit on everybody, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It just, it sucked to be an American, and it sucked to be anyone in the world that was in any way related to it. in some way. But anyway, if you got a question, comment, something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked to you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can subscribe to our little piece of unscripted shenaniganry at TuneIn, Google Play, archive.org, RSS, pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator that you can think of. There's a good 6-to-1 chance that we're on there. So, with that out of the way, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Elogi, good night, sleep tight. I'm so glad that this week is almost over.